Hare Krishna. Guten Tag. Buongiorno. Guten Morgen. Bonjour and Namaste from wherever you're from. Every time I come to Bhaktivedanta Manor, which is... everybody's changed. I look at the back row, I don't recognize anybody. Who's been here less than a month? Oh, okay, that's why. Well, we welcome you here to Bhaktivedanta Manor. As if I was the only person who had the power of welcoming. Today is a special day, and we are celebrating the appearance day of three saints. Saints are very important because they embody the qualities which we as people aspire for. If you want to become a good footballer, you will most likely have an image of a footballer that you would like to become. Okay? Now I've turned everybody's minds onto football now. Okay? If you are interested in music, you may have an image or a sound of the musician or the band that you would most like to become like. Usually when you ask some young musicians, who are your influences? They say, oh, well, you know, there's a bit of David Bowie, and there's a bit of Radiohead, and there's a bit of this and a bit of that. And if you get a very pretentious young band that wants to make its name, they say, no, the only people influencing us is ourselves. Which, of course, is, you know, which means they'll be famous for about 1 minute. Whereas if you ask a devotee, who are your influences? Who are your influences? They will give you a long list of people. And those people will be devotees. They'll be devotees because you will say to them, how did you join? And then the devotee's face will usually smile and he'll go, oh, well, you know, I met this devotee and it was like this and he said this or she said this and then they gave me some prasadam. And do you remember the name of that devotee? Oh, yeah. And it could be like 20 years ago. How many people do you remember that you met briefly from 20 years ago, but you always remember the first devotee that you met? The next devotee that you met was the person that convinced you to join, as we used to say. What does it mean to join the Krishna consciousness movement? Well, in the past, it used to mean just physically moving into a house with the other devotees. Now it means making some sort of profession of commitment. The day I first started doing one round a day, I can remember that day for the rest of my life. It was so wonderful. I made a vow to chant one round a day. Doesn't sound like a big deal to the people who are chanting 16 rounds, but to the person who has just begun chanting one round, that's a really big deal. That's the beginning of their spiritual life. Don't knock beginnings. Beginnings are very important. Without beginnings, you can't have all the rest. People have got to get started. So then the next thing they remember is, I was feeling a bit weak, and this is the devotee that persuaded me to stay. This is the devotee who persuaded me to stay. I was going to leave, and the devotee came to me and said, don't leave. Don't leave. I think you should stay because you're a good devotee. I can see your qualities. You could be a sannyasi one day. That's what I was told. Look, what happened? Three kids. I just passed my 34th wedding anniversary yesterday. Well, I don't know. Is it? Is it? Is it? I don't have one of those stick things. What do they call them? I don't have one of those, and I'm not dressed in orange. So why are you applauding? Well, because at least it's something. He's sitting on the cushion in front of us trying to give a class. You might as well praise him at the beginning. So someone told me, and it was Tribhuvanath, of course, you got the makings of a sannyasi, I can see. And my chest swelled up and I thought, oh, yeah, actually, I see it myself. So then the next person is the person who initiates you. And you always remember them because that's such a big day. You get initiated and then it's like, oh, he was the person who saved me. Actually, we are saved by many people before initiation, and were saved by an awful lot of people after initiation. But we tend not to notice those too much. Except one or two people who have taken your life in a particular direction. Perhaps it was a service direction. Perhaps people encouraged you to do something that you felt a little bit fearful to do. See, that's in spiritual life. In spiritual life, you don't just progress like an airplane taking off. You sort of come up a little bit and plateau, up a little bit and plateau, up a little bit and plateau. That's the graph of your spiritual life. And wherever you plateau, you need a lot of encouragement and purification. And sometimes purification comes by hard knocks, and sometimes encouragement just comes by someone not knocking you, but by encouraging you that you have these wonderful qualities. I've seen that you have these wonderful qualities, and I know that you can do this next thing, whatever the next thing is, whether it's to serve in a particular capacity, whether it's to open something, start something, learn something, change ashram. You know, I see that you have those qualities in you to be a good whatever. So these are the people that make our life very important. And if you do that for thousands of people, then you get a street named after you. Or people start naming their children after you. It's always in the next generation. Sometimes the great movers of the spiritual fellowships, they don't, how can we say, they're not recognized in their own lifetime. In the Catholic Church, the first qualification to be a saint is that you have to be dead. That's the first qualification. During your life, the first qualification is that you have to undergo suffering. So it's not a very nice life, but you get a street named after you die. Okay? And people start naming their children. And that was the system all across Europe. So whenever you meet someone in Europe, it's often that they are named after someone who was profoundly influential. That's why when you go to, you go anywhere, you'll find Joseph, you'll find Mary, you'll find Stephen, you'll find Paul, Peter, Jacob. You'll find all these biblical names. And if you go to Mexico, you'll find a lot of Jesus. They didn't do that. Didn't do that in Protestant Europe. You don't call your son Jesus. That's a bit too much. But in India, and of course if you go to, this is where Navadweep cuts me off. You go to Bradford, or you go to Saudi Arabia, every second child is called Muhammad. In actual fact, it's very difficult to, you know, we think there should be slightly more names because it's difficult to choose this Muhammad between that Muhammad. You don't know whether you're talking about this one or that one. God has many names. We would encourage people to use them. You go to India and you get Krishna, Narayan, Lakshmi, Shiva, Mahesh, you know, very, very standard names, you know. And you go to some places like Bali and, you know, the people will call their children Krishna 1, Krishna 2, Krishna 3. That's lack of imagination or theological understanding, but they call the children. So, but that's dying out. That is actually dying out. Now we have, you know, people calling their children all kinds of names. Names that have no connection to a saint or any great reforming person. So we have the Waynes, and we have the Ronaldos. God knows who they called them after. But we have people who are being called after film stars, because as religion dies, then other levels of fame... Good morning. As religion dies, particularly in the West, then other names become more prominent. So your name itself is extremely important, because that's the sound vibration that you hear all your life. So when a devotee gets initiated and they get their spiritual name, that's, you know, very important for them. Some people, we can't wait until they get a spiritual name. We give them, what's your name? Well, your name is Achyuta. Okay, we'll skip that one. So they get a name in the ashram, you know. But as religion dies, people lose track of saints, and they lose track of saintly qualities. Now nobody knows what you're meant to be famous for. What are you meant to be famous for? You become a Facebook personality, or an Instagram star, or some other, you know, sporting person or a music person. So people are attracted to fame, where the qualities are transitory. But that fits very much within Kali Yuga, because people are only famous for a little bit. It's very democratic, actually. Because Lakshmi, who brings us fame, if she's not worshipped with Narayan, she's chanchala, she's flickering. So a person becomes very famous for a while, and then infamous. A person becomes very skilled at doing something, and then they start losing their skills, and you know, they get tackled by someone from Slovenia or Malta or Georgia. That's it. Their career's over. That's it. It has a, you know, it has a beginning, okay? It has a middle somewhere, and it has the beginning of the end. That's the material world, folks. Fame is a very, very unmerciful task master or mistress. She comes into your life, and then she goes. Strength comes, strength goes. Physical beauty comes, physical beauty goes. Money comes, money goes. So every single thing that a person could be famous for and could have a street named after them for, or their children named after them for. And sometimes after death we find that a person wasn't famous at all. He never really did what we thought he did. Or he was a scoundrel behind the scenes. And so people start taking down the street signs. People start, don't they? We want to take back that knighthood. You know, the things that he was doing, we want to take that knighthood back. Lord such and such, we should, you know, he was a scoundrel. So fame is like that. So therefore the only people that we can really depend on are those people that have qualities that are given to them by the eternal and the absolute, and that is God. So therefore, saints are the most famous people. And they deserve to be the most famous people because from now on into the future, those that have embodied eternal values have encouraged people the most. And we shall see as time goes by that the list of qualities given in, when is it, beginning of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Skips me. Therefore, I shall never become famous for a person who remembers verses. But Krishna gives a list of 30 qualities of goodness and knowledge. And so, it's 13, there you go. I knew which book it was. So in the 11th canto, when Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, he gives another list of qualities. And he gives 28 qualities. Now, if someone can answer me the Shastric riddle of how the 28 qualities Krishna gives to Uddhava in the 11th canto becomes the 26 qualities we read about in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, please let me know, because it's agitating my mind. So devotees in Krishna consciousness, we have a calendar, and sometimes the calendar is something that the Lord did on a particular day. Today is the day that the Lord lifted up Govardhan Hill. Okay, let's celebrate. Let's celebrate. Haribol. Today is the day when Krishna danced the Rasa dance. Hooray, let's celebrate. Sometimes it's when a great saint who was intimately connected with Krishna did something. And sometimes it's just when they were born, and sometimes it's when they died. Now, when they died, why do we remember the death day of a saint? Well, because that death day is the transition from this world to the next. So therefore we say it's their disappearance day. We don't normally say that a great devotee dies. That's why we don't say that. So they have special qualities. Oh, they lived such a long time ago. Why should we remember them? Because their qualities are eternal. And their activities are worthy of glorification, because even today in 2016, what they did in the social environment, the climate that they were in, can give us inspiration today. Because they must have been brave to do it, there must have been a great deal of courage, there must be a great deal of purity to be able to do what they did. They must have been experiencing God consciousness in order to share it that much with others. You see, inspiration is something that you can't fake. Either you're inspired or you're not. Inspiration is like the flu. You know, you sneeze and a person next to you catches it. Okay, inspiration is like that. You speak and someone next sitting next to you catches inspiration. Conviction is like that. When you're convinced, then your voice is convinced and your arms are convinced and you start, you know, doing things and it convinces a person sitting next to you. And that's when you know that you're dealing with a saint or a person who's embodying saintly qualities. You know, when I first came here to the temple, about half the devotees were very convinced and inspirational and enthusiastic. And I've never, ever in my life, never in my life, the curtains opened, we began the Govindam prayers, and then we used to sing to the deities. See, because what happened is that before Prabhupada passed away, we always used to have a bhajan in front of the deities. Otherwise, what happens is exactly what happens now. We come from the deities, and there's three people in Guru Puja, and everybody else is taking Charanamrita and getting close with the deities. So to facilitate that real need that we have to get up close with the deities, we used to sing a bhajan, like Yashramati Nandan, and then come round and do Prabhupada. It just takes exactly the same time, but it makes more sense. Anyway, Hare Krishna. So, and if I haven't been cut off, I'll now continue the class. So, I saw during the kirtan, and I was looking. I want to see who's inspired and who's not. Because some devotees said things that inspired me and some didn't. Anyway, then I saw four devotees. They were, to me, they were fully grown men. I was only 17. They were 24. But these were fully grown men who'd been in the world a long time. And they were crying as he did kirtan. And it wasn't a sort of, you know, sahaja thing. It was just very pure. Because Bhaktivedanta Manor was not a very easy place to live in 1974. It was cold. That rule number one, the ashram should be cold. Rule number two, the water that you shower with should be cold. Rule number three, there is only porridge for breakfast. Get used to it. That is spiritual life. And if you're lucky, you get 10 chickpeas. And if you're a staunch brahmachari, you get 8. And if you're luxuriating, you get 12. And a slice of orange, that's it. Thank you very much. So anyway, it wasn't that they'd come to show off. They were living here, living a very austere life. But four men were crying, and I thought, wow, this is real. This is something. This Krishna consciousness is real. How could it not be real? What would have provoked these men to experience these things? There's just some statues on a shelf, you know. There's just a bit of music by George Harrison that they listen to every day. I mean, that's not going to make them cry. What's making them cry? It's got to be the kirtan. But what about the kirtan that would make them cry? Well, maybe they've realized the sound of the holy name. Maybe that's the difference. And so at that point, I remember the devotees. I remember where I was. I remember that vision of these four fully grown men just ecstatically dancing, singing, and tears rolling down their cheeks. So I thought to myself, I've got to stick around a little bit longer. So here I am. I'm still sticking around a little bit. Nobody cried during deity greeting this morning, and I'm very upset. Okay, tomorrow I want to see a few people crying. So today we're remembering three saints. Why are they important saints? Because they're extremely important. And it just so happens that they all passed away on the same day, which saints sometimes do. Prabhupada's guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he said, if all the books in the world, all the books in the world were to disappear, he said, perfection of life could be gained if there was just two books in the world. He said, Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. People were just, wow. You mean if all the books in the world were no longer in existence, and if there were just two books, Srimad Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses, the account of Krishna's pastimes in this world, half the book, The other half of the book, Krishna's other pastimes. And the rest of it, family trees and genealogies of saints and kings. And then he said, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So after he'd surprised his disciples, he said something more. And he said, and even if Srimad Bhagavatam itself were to disappear from the surface of the earth, he said, everything could be achieved by Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's some statement, isn't it? That's quite a statement. That makes Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami extremely important in our line. Why? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, because all that is missing in Srimad Bhagavatam is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I heard my guru only the other day, says Adi Guru. Sri Ramaswamy said, Srimad Bhagavatam is perfection and everything that you need to know is there. Well, I'm just quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He said, all that is not there is found in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That makes it the most important book in the world, which means that the person who wrote it is the most important author in the world. And today is the day we mark his contribution. So shall we begin? Hari Bol? Do I get a Hari Bol? Hari Bol! Okay, that's the new chant, Hari Bol. Get with the times, Adikara. So I'm going to not try to bore you here, but I wanted to speak about Krishnadas Kaviraj. Basically, nobody knows when he was born, and nobody knows when he passed away. We know that that it was this day, the month of Ashwin. You know, it was the whatever day it is today. What day is it today? No. The lunar calendar. Huh? It's Dwadashi. That's right. It's the Dwadashi in the month of Ashwin. Huh? Shukla Dwadashi. The bright fortnight. There's two Dwadashis, two Akadashis, two everything in a month, in a lunar month. So today's that day. Some experts say that he was born in 1496. When is Chaitanya Charitamrita? 1616, I believe. So he was born in a family of doctors. Born in a family of doctors in a place called Jamatpur. And Jamatpur is about a 2.5-hour drive from Mayapur. If you have a chance to go there, not many people go there, you will find Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's Gornatai deities are still being worshipped in that village. So, you know, you'll be very welcome in that village. It's near a place called Salar, in the Bardaman province in Bengal. So his father was Bhagirath and his mother was Sunanda. And the whole community there was physicians and doctors and, you know, they would heal you. So we don't know too much about his early life, but we do know that he had a brother and his brother was called Shamananda or Shamdas, depending which version you read. And at one time his family organized a 24-hour kirtan. 24-hour kirtans are a Bengali invention. They have been, you know, taken up by ISKCON. There's a difference between 24-hour kirtan, which is called Ashtaprahara kirtan, and Akhand kirtan. Akhand kirtan means unbroken kirtan. It never stops. One time Prabhupada was outside just walking from the Fogel Ashram to the Krishna Balaram temple. And they heard the sound of kirtan coming from a temple, and Prabhupada said, they are all pure devotees. And he said, the kirtan has been going for more than 20 years, Akhand kirtan. And so the devotees became very confused because they thought Prabhupada was the only pure devotee. He said, how is that possible? He said, no, these are pure devotees. So after that, people would go there and something like that. So the only way that you can keep doing kirtan for such a long time is if you like doing it, because basically we only do what we want to do. That's what comes down. In spiritual life, you will only do it because you want to do it. And giving you the motivation to do it, there will be a saint who is doing it because he really, really wants to do it. So anyway, they had a 24-hour kirtan. They invited everybody to come. And there was someone called Gunarnava Mishra, at these kirtans, they also have, deities of Radha and Krishna, and they will come and they will chant, and different people take turns to chant. Perhaps they chant for an hour at a time, and then they change around, and then they... No harmonium, by the way. Harmoniums did not appear in Bengal until many years later, a couple of centuries later, 3 centuries later. Just mridanga, kartal, and maybe something else, stringed instrument, flute maybe. So Gunarnava Mishra was the pujari. And there was also an eccentric person called Miniketana Ram. Now Miniketana Ram Das was a devotee of Nityananda Prabhu. He's a devotee of Nityananda. This is sometime afterwards we're talking. The lords began their leela. And Miniketana Ram Das, he was a little bit eccentric, you could say. He took after Lord Nityananda in that he had some eccentricities of behavior. He was always in ecstasy, but he used to play a flute. He used to carry a flute with him, and sometimes he used to hit people with the flute. And when he hit people with the flute, they would also get love of God. So this is not an ordinary eccentric person. This is, a saintly person. But sometimes he was assessed on the basis of his external activities. Now, in normal life, you base your estimation of a person's saintliness by what they say. As Arjuna said, how do I know who's a saintly person? How does he walk? How does he talk? How does he sit? What's his behavior? How can I tell one if I find one? The whole point is that from God, you get the definition of a saint, because God alone knows who is close to him. So when God speaks, this is a saint, then you know what the qualities are. So then, but sometimes a person will be slightly Gupta or hidden. His saintliness will be secret. He will seem to be a little bit, unusual. And there are also descriptions like that, Bamsidas Babaji, very unusual personality. So Gunarnava Mishra did not pay respects. And then, there was some back and forward between Miniketana Ram and Gunarnava Mishra. Anyway, afterwards, after it all finished, the younger brother, Shyamananda, he said, actually, this is, correct me if I'm wrong, he said, this is something that shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have been like this. So he argued with Miniketana Ram over the identity of Nityananda. Chaitanya's identity was somehow universally appreciated, especially after he took sannyas. Then he became identified. When a person is a sannyasi, people, they don't underestimate his saintliness. They can even invent saintliness when it's not actually there, but anyway. So the identity of Lord Nityananda was sometimes disputed by people. So then Krishna's, he said, you're accepting of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but not accepting Nityananda is like the logic of half a hen. The story, there was a farmer who had a hen, and he cut the hen in half because the front half was giving him eggs, the back half was giving him eggs, but the front half was costing money. So a very foolish farmer, he cut the hen in half, and of course he ended up with nothing. He said, if you separate Gora and Nittai, he said, you'll get nothing. Because one who accepts Gora has to accept Nityananda. He said, they are the sun and the moon, two halves of a hen. He says, it's just faulty logic. So then they had an argument. And it is said in the purports by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Prabhupada that Lord Nityananda, he gives great mercy to anyone who stands up for him in public. Anyone who preaches the glories of Nityananda, you get his blessings, and that will get you Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's blessings. So that's a secret, folks. So anyway, what happened that night was that Krishnadas had a dream. He had a dream, and in that dream, Lord Nityananda came, and he was dressed as Balaram, and he was surrounded by all these cowherd boys. And he said, what did he say? I've got it written down, exactly what he heard in the dream. And this is where he said, here's the word of the Lord. Are are Krishna das nakaradhabhai brindavan yaha tanha sarva laryahai. He said, don't worry. He said, go to Vrindavan, for there you will attain all things. Now, what happens when you actually have a dream of Krishna, or you actually have a dream of the Guru, is that not only do you see, not only do you hear, but also in the heart you feel. And then you wake up and you still have that sense of conviction. If you don't have those things resonating in you, then it was just a dream. It's a nice dream, but it's just a dream. When the Guru or Krishna comes to you in that state of consciousness, and you feel the sentiments, and you feel the sentiments afterwards, then you have had a visit. And so devotees are hoping for these visits. So he left Bengal, and he went to Vrindavan, where he took initiation from Raghunath Das Goswami, whose story I'm about to tell. So the residents of Vrindavan, they said, well, you were right there in Bengal. We have some stories that have come to us, but we don't know all the stories. Can you please write for us the stories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his teachings? And of course, I've skipped a lot of his life, because by this time he's 90, something like that, and he's going deaf, and he's going blind, and he's got the shakes, he can hardly write. And his expression during his writing of his book, he's saying, I don't know how I write. I just don't know how I'm writing these words. He said, I'm almost deaf, almost blind, I can hardly see what I'm writing. He said, but still I write. And his information came from very good sources. But he didn't, before he began writing, he took the blessing of the residents of Vrindavan, but he also went before the Madan Mohan deity in Koroli, I believe. And then he asked, he prayed. And then, it would have been in Vrindavan at that time, right? In Vrindavan, and then later on moved to Koroli. So he went to the Madan Mohan deity, and he said, you know, if you give me the power to write, then I can write. And then at that moment, a flower garland fell from the deities. Didn't fall on his neck, that's another story. But it fell, and people took it as a sign that this man's prayers are now being answered. And so he began to write. But his information came from two sources. One was Murari Gupta. Murari Gupta had kept a diary called a Kadacha. Kadacha means diary. And sometimes in these times, in the 1400s, 1500s, keeping a diary was very important. Anybody keep a diary? Do any of you keep a diary? Yeah, any ladies keep a diary? You write in your diary? It's a very good thing to keep a diary, or sometimes these days they call it a spiritual journal. And you can have a laugh in 20 years' time. And, you know, all the different dreams that you had, or the different ideas that you had about Krishna. And people read their diaries for fun when they get older. I've kept a diary. I was reading my diary the other day from when I lived in Africa. And it's for yourself, it's good as a diary. But it's good for other people. It's good for other people. And we wish that many more people had kept a diary, because now, actually, we are privileged to read about the birth of the Krishna consciousness movement 50 years ago from people who were there, and they can still remember, but they're writing their books now. People are writing their books. You know, Shyam Sundar's just coming out with his Chasing the Rhinos book, and Satsarup Swami, he wrote his book. He was the first diarist, you could say. And we're getting a slightly different Prabhupada through everybody that writes. There's an official, you know, diary, and then there's another person who's got another take on Prabhupada, and another person who saw Prabhupada in a different way, and they wrote their diary. But what does not get written down gets forgotten. If you don't write it down, it gets forgotten. Therefore, the most important diary that we want devotees to write, apart from their own lives, which is kind of interesting for you and perhaps for others, because nobody knows who you're going to become. You think, well, it's just me. It's just me. Who's going to be interested in my life? Well, apart from you, there may be others who are interested in your life or your reflections. And that's how historians look back to history. They found diaries and letters on Hadrian's Wall, bordering England and Scotland. And in those places, they can find out, it's one letter, which was written on a clay tablet, it said, "Dear son, here's an extra pair of socks for you that I'm sending with Maximus." So the mother of the Roman soldier, she's sending an extra pair of socks to her son because it's cold up in Scotland. And he's not used to it. He's from Italy. So we find out by these Kodachas. So Murari Gupta, he was a doctor, and he lived, what is it, about 3/4 of a kilometer. You can still go there today. He lived in a village that was very close to where Lord Chaitanya, Nimai, was a baby. And so all the early information we get from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the diaries of Murari Gupta. Then there's an outline of the later life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that was written by Raghunath Das Goswami. That's not a kadacha, not a diary, but it's known as Karicha. Karicha. And that was written by Swarup Damodar. Swarup Damodar also wrote a Karicha. It was the life of Lord Chaitanya. And we have information from Raghunath Das Goswami, who served Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. So, because Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami was initiated by Raghunath, he had access to the diaries, and he was writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita only really as a follow-up book to the Chaitanya Bhagavat, which at those days was called the Chaitanya Mangala, which had been written by Vrindavan Das Thakur. So anything that Vrindavan Das Thakur writes, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami does not write on, or he writes only briefly, because he doesn't want to sort of exceed the limit of respect for a senior Vaishnava. So, but so detailed was Chaitanya Charitamrita that it quickly became very famous, and then it became the biography of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because it contained many more teachings, and the teachings were what people read for it. And Krishnadas just said, he said, "I write like a puppet in the hands of the deity. As he pulls the strings, then I write." He said, "That's all." Okay, that's Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami, we do have his dates. He was born in 1494, and he lived until 1586. So on this day in 1586, he passed away. Let's read something. Shall we read something from my big book of saints? Here's my big book of saints. Hare Krishna. Is that okay? Reading is not so interesting as speaking, I know, but, you know. So Raghunath Das Goswami, he is sort of like us in a way that he's a young convert to Krishna consciousness. He didn't grow up with it. His father was Govardhan Majumdar, and he was born in the town of Saptagram in the Hooghly district, which is not far from today's Calcutta. Actually, it's probably in Calcutta now, very close to the... So he's the village was Krishnapur, and he was the son of a very rich family, And they're so rich that they had a special deal with the Shah. The Shah was the India at that time was under Muslim occupation, and he had a special deal with the Shah in that he didn't have to pay taxes to the tax man; he paid them directly to the Shah. But that was to bring about a problem. And Raghunath had an uncle whose name was Kalidas, who was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotee. The family priest was Balaram Acharya, and the guru was Yadunandan Acharya. And they're both characters in the stories. So Yadunandan was a disciple of Advaita Acharya and a dedicated devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had also received the special blessings of Vasudev Datta Thakur. So Haridas Thakur, at one point, he came to the house of Krishnadas Kaviraj. He was just... So then, excuse me, Krishnadas Kaviraj, Raghunath Das, that's right. Sorry to confuse you. So he had, Raghunath Das in his early life, he had the blessings of Haridas Thakur. Haranya and Govardhan had an annual income of 800,000 rupees. And at that time, one rupee could buy about 650 pounds of rice. That's how much a rupee was. Even though Raghunath was the only heir to this great fortune, he was indifferent to riches from his childhood. He had his first opportunity to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when the Lord came to Shantipur after taking sannyas. As soon as he saw the Lord, Raghunath fell to his feet in love. Raghunath's father, Govardhan Majumdar, always served Advaita Acharya with faith and devotion, and thus Advaita Prabhu was predisposed to show kindness to the young Raghunath. Now, this sounds like a really nice family, doesn't it? I mean, come on. The father, he gets to see Haridas Thakur. I mean, how many families in Wembley get to see Haridas Thakur? How many people get to be initiated by Advaita Acharya himself? But we're finding that despite the initiation, despite the saintly company, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Raghunath finally leaves his family, he said, "Us, you've left the pit of stool." Now, come on, isn't that a bit harsh? It was because Govardhan Majumdar, despite all the great connections that he had, the great saintly connections, couldn't really take the full blessings because he was attached to having his one son take over the family business, you could say, the family land business. And that attachment in itself prevented him from actually saying to his son, when his son wanted to become a devotee, and really become a devotee, and go and become initiated and become serious, his father said, "No, can't do that." So he tempted him with money, tempted him with a beautiful wife, and then he had to lock him up. He put three guards, five Brahmins in the house. Okay? Five Brahmins inside the house. Okay? Three guards outside. And each time, Raghunath managed to get away. Because someone who wants to be Krishna conscious, you cannot stop them. They can be Krishna conscious in any circumstance. And someone who doesn't want to be Krishna conscious, you can't force it. You can try to enliven and encourage, but if they've really made a determination not to, then you can't do anything. So, first time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Calm yourself and return home. Don't be foolish. It takes time to cross the ocean of material suffering. Don't make a show of monkey renunciation simply for others' benefit. Enjoy the worldly life in a moderate way without attachment. Be fixed on Krishna internally while externally dealing with the world in the appropriate fashion. It will not be long before Krishna delivers you. So here's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's conciliatory. He knows the parents involved. And sometimes we have this situation where, you know, a devotee wants to become a brahmachari, but it would break the heart of his mother. Okay? You broke your mother's heart. Did you realize that? No? You didn't? Was she quite happy? She's quite happy. She's your mother. Tell me, without flinching, your mother's quite happy to see you with no hair and without a tie. Okay? And without a job in the city. She's quite happy. Okay. Then God bless her. But most parents, if you say to them, I'm going to become a monk, then they, you know, in the olden days, in the 1970s, they used to call the, what called the deprogrammers, you know, he's being caught by a cult. Of course, what are you going to do? St. Francis of Assisi, his father said the same thing about him. Oh, he's been caught by a cult. He's gone mad. He's gone mad. Some cult members must have got to him. But St. Francis of Assisi, you know, everybody's heard his name. Is anybody who's not heard the name of St. Francis of Assisi? Interesting, isn't it? Okay, he hasn't heard it. You're from Russia. Where are you from? Slovakia. Yes. And you never heard the name of St. Francis? Yeah, okay, see? Universally appreciated. Universally appreciated. And so famous. But why is he famous? It's for the saintly qualities. So nobody would have heard of him if he'd stayed in his father's cloth shop. Nobody. If Francesco had stayed in his father's cloth shop, and he said, actually, Dad, you know, when you die, I really do want to take over the family business. That's it. You never would have heard of him. But because he left home, he got God, as they say, because the cult, you know, the God cult did get to him. But his father, you know, his father locked him up. And so it's not just a, you know, it's not just a recent phenomenon of the 1970s. It's a medieval phenomenon. It's an ancient phenomenon that when people get blessed by God for sainthood, immediately no one around them will really appreciate. Nobody will appreciate you being a devotee. So get used to that. Someone asked me the other day, he said, how was it when you first became a devotee? I said, my first time, I just plucked up the courage to pick up my mridanga. I'd have been here for like, you know, 3 months or something. I'd seen everybody else leading kirtan, and I did a bit in the temple. And we were on Portobello Road on a Saturday. Just plucked up the courage and said, do you want to? I said, oh, I'm not sure. Okay. And I put the mridanga, and I thought, oh, no, it's my voice. I'm going to be leading the Hare Krishna movement in kirtan. See, there was me and there was the Hare Krishna movement. So then I got about three mantras out and I'm thinking, oh, this is all right. And then some butcher picked up a chicken's head with pieces from the neck, still dripping blood, and he threw it right in my face. This was my initiation into leading the Krishna consciousness movement, at least the movement down Portobello Road. I said, now they just throw rose petals, which is not actually true. We had some devotees who just a couple of years ago, they went out to Sarajevo, and one devotee got stabbed on Harinam. People get kicked on Harinam. So no one will really appreciate when you do the God stuff. You know, God will appreciate, but it's a thankless task. And you may at times feel very lonely and think, is it just me? Is there anybody up there who actually cares? Well, he does care. They do care. But you will be tested and challenged in different ways. So Raghunath was even tested by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even tested by God himself. He said, you may want God, but I'm telling you to go home. And you just have to be patient. And sometimes patience is the most important virtue in spiritual life. It's very difficult to be patient. You know, even George Harrison wrote that song, didn't he? Krishna, I really want to see you. I really want to go with you. I really want to feel you. But it takes so long. It takes so long. An expression of longing, but why does it take so long? You know? I want to be Krishna conscious. Why does it take so long? You have to be patient. A life is not a very long time. You think it is. But an ant also thinks that his life is a really long time. A little fly that is born on one day and dies 24 hours later is thinking, oh, it's not so bad, I've had a really long life. In Nairobi, in Africa, we used to have one day of the year during the rainy season. I used to wake up in the morning and the whole temple room floor was just absolutely covered in flies, dead flies. They'd been born in the night, they'd reproduced in the night, and they died before Mangalati. That's life. But they thought, yeah, you know, that's life. It's a long life, at least I had a family. Yeah, I'll die. That looks like an interesting floor. And we used to have to, unfortunately, crunch our way from the Brahmachari ashram to the... Well, this is, you know... So it's just one life. You think it's a long time. It's not very long at all. So Krishna wants patience. So he had patience. Eventually he came to the Lord. And of course, it's a very beautiful place that he came to Lord Nityananda. And if you go into the Prasadam room, which you will very soon, I promise, on the side there you will see a festival called the Chipped Rice Festival, Chidadahi Utsav. And this comes from the time when Lord Nityananda Prabhu, knowing that Raghunath had money, he said, all right, he said, come here, you're a thief. You've stolen. So he put his foot on his head and he said, now you have to serve all the Vaishnavas. You're finally coming. Now you have to serve all the Vaishnavas. And I want you to organize a festival. So we organized a festival, and we still celebrate that festival. And as we celebrate that festival, we celebrate two things. One, Nityananda's mercy on Raghunath Das, and another on Raghunath Das's creating this beautiful festival. A place called Panihati. You can still go, and the tree is still there, under which Lord Nityananda sat, and another one under which he preached, and where he placed his lotus feet on the head of Raghunath Das. So he also goes to Vrindavan, he sits by Radhakund, and he also writes and he chants. And at one point he's in Jagannath Puri, and his renunciation has become so severe. It's interesting that, you know, he comes from a very rich home, but his renunciation becomes so severe that he goes to the Lion Gate. And that Lion Gate is one of the four main gates of Jagannath Puri Temple. And they just throw out all the prasadam that's not fit for human consumption. It's past its relish-by date. So there's a big heap. It's like a compost heap with rotting prasadam. And Raghunath was begging outside the main gate, but then he thought, this is not good. So he went round to the other gate, and he used to take the, you know, prasadam that was covered in sort of green fuzz, and he would wash it, and inside the rotten there would be still good rice, and that's the rice that he would soak and eat. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came by one day and he said, what's this? You're having a feast? You're having a feast without me? He said, how can you have a feast and not invite me? And he reached for the prasad, and Raghunath said, no, my lord, please don't take that. He said, this is so beautiful, so relishable. So Raghunath then, he was in Radhakund, and he lives there for a long time, and he passes on his knowledge of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami, who then writes it up. And that's how we get the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's so much more I could say. But in the 1 minute I have left, I just want to say something about Raghunath Bhatta. We don't know a great deal about Raghunath Bhatta, and the reason is because he told Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he said, "You're writing a book, right?" He said, "Please don't mention me." He said, "If you mention me, I'll make sure the book doesn't get read. I have friends." So he said, maybe he didn't say it quite like that, but he said, "Please don't mention me." He said, "It's improper. I'm just a lowly person." Raghunath Bhatta, very interesting. He was brought up as the son of Tapan Mishra. Tapan Mishra, a dear devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He came from Rampur in East Bengal, a place we now call Bangladesh. He was a teacher of Sanskrit. And then one day he had a dream in which he was instructed by a Brahmin to go to Nimai Pandit, who would clarify these matters for him. It's a beautiful story. I wrote a book about the guru and disciple relationship. Now out of print, but shortly back in print. Anyway, I was interviewing different ISKCON gurus for different... So one person told me, he said, he had read Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he knew that he wanted to get initiated by Prabhupada, but he didn't know where he was. He was from Bihar, and there was no... It was the early 70s, and there was no ISKCON where he was. So he went to... he heard that Prabhupada had gone to Benares. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also stayed for 2 months in Benares. He stays for 4 months in Sri Rangam. He stays for 2 months in Benares, or Varanasi, or Kashi. And it was the oldest city in India, and mentioned in many shastras. Anyway, he used to stay with Tapan Mishra and eat with Chandrasekhar Acharya. So anyway, so this person he wanted to get. So he went to Benares, and he went to different places, and he said, "I heard that Swami Bhaktivedanta was in Varanasi. Can you tell me where he is?" He said, "No, never heard of him." And he said, "No, never heard of him. Swami who? Never heard of him. There's so many Swamis. If you don't find him, there's so many in Benares." He said, "Well," and he went to one hotel, and he asked the receptionist, "Oh, yeah, yeah, they were staying. They took some rooms here." But they all went out for a walk. And somehow, he either bumped into the devotees who were coming back, and they said, "Oh, yeah, Swami Bhaktivedanta's, he was around, he went there." So then he got lost, and he saw one person, one Benares sadhu, and he went up to him, and he said, "I'm looking for Swami Bhaktivedanta. Have you seen him?" And he said, "What do you want him for?" That's sadhu from Benares. He said, "What do you want him for?" He said, "No, he's a great sadhu. He's written a book, or translated a book, Chaitanya Charitamrita." He said, "What is that book about?" He said, "Well, it describes how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha and Krishna, you know." And he said, "Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just a saint. How can he be Radha and Krishna?" He said, "No, you don't understand." He said, "But if you read that book, you would understand." He said, "Why should I read that book? There's so many sadhus here in Benares. This is the home of Sanskrit. So why should I read a book written in Bengali?" He said, "No, you're not understanding." He said that you have to understand who is the greatest sadhu. Someone, and then he was preaching to him. Anyway, then the person started laughing. He said, "Come on, let's go." He said, "I'll introduce you to my disciples." He said, "Well, who are you?" He said, "I'm who you were looking for." So he'd been preaching about the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the person who wrote the book to Prabhupada. Anyway, so where were we? So Raghunath Bhatta doesn't want to be in the book, but Mahaprabhu stayed in the house of Chandrasekhar, but he took his meals at Tapan Mishra. That was what it was. So Raghunath Bhatta hurried to Puri after visiting Bengal, etc., etc., etc. He came and he The Lord recognized Raghunath and lifted him up. He asked for news of Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar Vaidya, then sent Raghunath to Jagannath, telling him to come and eat with him afterward. He asked Govinda to make housing arrangements for Raghunath and introduced him to Swarup Damodar and other associates. So then he stays there for 8 months, and then so many adventures. The Lord told him to go back to Kashi and serve his Vaishnav parents, who are now aged and infirm. So this is the second time that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has done that. See, serve your parents, folks. Don't forget them. So the Lord then made him a gift of his own neck beads, and then told him to go come to Puri again. And the Lord then gave him, when his parents died, he came back to Puri and stayed with Mahaprabhu, and he stayed there for another 8 months, and then Mahaprabhu told him to go back to Vrindavan and stay with Rupa and Sanatan. He told him to continue studying and give discourses on the Bhagavatam, as well as to chant the holy name. The Lord then gave him a 10-foot-long Tulsi garland that had been worn by Lord Jagannath, as well as some pan that had none of the intoxicating spices. So, then he... Raghunath Bhatta would never speak or listen to gossip. When he used to chant the Bhagavatam in different melodies, Rupa and Sanatan would listen. And that's as far as I've got. So he disappeared in either 1579 or 1580. Gentle folk, I hope that you take the stories of these wonderful devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with you in your life. You'll read more about them, much more than we've had the power to discuss today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.